Hi, I'm Piper.
And I'm Erin.
Welcome to Off the Tracks podcast, where we explore what it means to do law differently.
Sean Bernstein is the owner and chief storyteller of The Right Stuff Agency, a content writing business based just outside Toronto. A journalist turned lawyer turned storyteller, he helps professionals and businesses better tell their stories through all forms of online content and copywriting. When he's not at a keyboard, Sean is usually busy honing his pub trivia skills or watching Jeopardy with a Super Bowl-like intensity. So welcome, Sean.
Sean, we are so excited you are here today. We always love an episode where it's a triple Windsor alum situation. That always makes us so happy. It's extra special. We're so glad you've joined us today. We would love to dive in and ask our, you know, starting question, our integral question here on Off the Tracks, which is how has your career really like evolved over time? And whether that's pre-law school or since law school, however you want to really take it, we welcome that.
Sure. It's been a bit of a winding journey. And, you know, it looks different to different people. So some would consider it that it's been a little bit all over the place. I think it's a bit of an evolution. And, you know, my whole life philosophy is when I hit a brick wall, I don't just stop. I go left, right, go right, and I find a way to kind of keep going. And that's been sort of the model of my career. So I started as a journalist. That's my first love. That really frames how I see the world, how I ask questions. I started in it as an undergrad, wound up leaving, came back to it, did a grad program, loved every second of it. Radio was my passion. Interviewing was my passion. And I think that framed a lot of the legal work that I did, you know, that whole ability to sort of ask questions and tell stories. That's really what a lot of advocacy is. So it does marry quite well. And you see, I don't know about in your class specifically, but I know in mine and the years around me, there's certainly a few ex-journos around. It's not an uncommon background to come in with. And that's the neat thing about law, right, is that people come in with all different kinds of lived experiences and undergrads and career paths and, you know, backgrounds. That's one of the things I really loved about law school. So the journalism career didn't really pan out, weren't a whole lot of options. Wound up going to, it took about a year doing totally unrelated work and, you know, HR and recruiting. Wound up going to Windsor. I loved my experience in law school, quite honestly. I had a great time. I, you know, kind of ran the Buena Vista Social Club out of my apartment and had people hanging out and basically ran a restaurant in my third year and just fed everybody. I had the best time. Didn't have as much fun in practice. I spent a few months after articling looking for something, found something for about 6 months that really was not a fit and not a great experience at all. Left law, said, okay, that's it. Dust in my hands. I'm kind of done. And, you know, took time out, was doing doc review, was took a marketing role at a big firm, and then went back to practice. Long story short, my dream firm called me and said, you know, hey, if you want to come join us, and I really did, now's the time. So I went back in for a year, almost a year. And I'm really glad that I did that year, because that year taught me that I never want to touch another file again as long as I live.
Yeah, so you have had quite the career, sort of practicing, non-practicing, practicing again, and now again, not practicing. So how have you navigated these transitions?
It's been an experience. The first time, you know, I went into my articles at a very small firm knowing that there was no chance of hire back. So I knew that I would be, you know, looking, and that was almost a blessing. I was able to network and really get to know the bar, and I love networking. I love people. So I'm that social butterfly that's kind of out there and doing things. And so I was able to network and I was able to really get to know the bar. It was a struggle after articling because I was really looking and had a lot of trouble finding something. When I left practice the first time, doc review saved my behind. I'll be really honest. I still recommend it today for someone who, you know, is looking for a way to help pay off their law school debts and not entirely sure what to do with their lives. It's a great stopgap, you know, for what it is. I was able to get in with a group that was doing it. That, you know, really, I mean, I was making no money in practice that first stint. So that really did help save my behind a little bit. The job on Bay Street was a marketing role at a Bay Street firm, which is not remotely where I saw myself, but a recruiter found me and they needed a lawyer who could write. So I went into that. And like I said, I left that to go back into practice. So it was a fairly smooth transition there. And this, you know, I knew that firm really well and I knew that world and I was excited to get back into it. And as I was leaving, you know, my mental health, and we'll talk about it, really did take a dive. And I was lucky to still have, you know, those DockerView contacts back and knew that I was sort of had a soft place to land, you know, that I wasn't leaving for no opportunity. I really did not want to go back into practice. That would have been my nightmare. I think what had happened to me at the firm would have happened at any other firm. So I was very afraid of the possibility of doing that. To be honest, I probably should have sooner taken a job at Starbucks at that point than practice law again. I just needed to clear my head. And I was grateful that, you know, they even put me on easier DockerView projects just to kind of help me get my head right and settle back into getting well again. So it's been, there have been rocky transitions, but, you know, frankly, I will be the top advocate for something like a DockerView that kind of helped save me during those in-between times where things were tough.
So Sean, thank you so much for sharing that. I think, you know, a question I get all the time from some of my coaching clients is how to get into DockerView. And obviously I know people like you and I have some other friends that have done DockerView in the past, but for people that maybe don't have those connections or don't really know how to, quote, get into DockerView, are there pathways that you would recommend, or is it really about knowing the right people?
So at the time that I started, it really wasn't very hard. Now, I got quite lucky, and I'll be candid. I had a friend whose brother-in-law was a manager at Deloitte, if we're going to name names. So that, and they're one of the main firms, especially in Toronto, that does the work. So that was really helpful. And that gave me a good road in. There are a number of, you know, third-party firms, consulting firms, et cetera, that are doing it. And they're not hard to get into. You'll see postings that are out there. As long as you have sort of a license and good standing, some companies require insurance, which is not hard to turn on your own. But throwing a resume is usually a good bet. The work is very hit and miss. And, you know, if you get yourself onto a roster, but they don't contact you for 6 months, doesn't mean that they've forgotten about you or fired you. It just means there's not work right now. It really ebbs and flows. And the people who do it full time are usually rostered a couple different places, and they almost kind of swing vine to vine. You know, they'll take a project here and a project there, and, you know, they're on a couple different lists, and they find a way to make a living. It can be a nice way to make a really decent living with no stress, but you have to get crafty about it. More and more, I'll close with this, more and more firms I find are bringing it in-house. And not to say that they're bringing it in-house with their own team. They're hiring still third-party lawyers, but they're doing it under their own umbrella. So, you know, there's a couple of the large national firms that are doing that, and you can still find your way in there. It's a little bit trickier. So I don't know the current state. I'm a little out of the loop at the moment. There are roads in to get started. And once you get started, I think it's a lot easier if you keep an ear to the ground to stay busy.
That is super helpful. Thanks for sharing that with our listeners so that those who are interested can sort of find their way into that if that's something that they're interested in. So you've kind of hinted at it a bit, but we would, you know, love to hear a bit more about what drew you to non-practicing career path, and what led you out of your roles practicing.
Sure. They're kind of one in the same and also two different separate answers. I mean, I'll start with the hard stuff first, is my mental health took an absolute dive in practice. It really, and I had dealt with some anxiety and some depression, you know, in the past, but things really got pretty aggressive about 6 months into my stint at, you know, what I thought was my dream firm. And, you know, there were probably some issues at the firm. I don't blame them one bit. I think what happened to me there would have happened anywhere else. So, you know, at the time, I might have thought it was them, but it really wasn't. I went through my EAP and went through a little bit of counseling. And the thought was, you know, oh, you don't need, you know, you might just need a new job, or you just kind of need to get away a little bit. And frankly, at the time, I was about to go on my honeymoon. So I, you know, said, okay, you know, I'll take a break. I'm going away. We're going on a cruise for 2 weeks. This is wonderful. And we did. We went to Europe and had this phenomenal time and loved it. And my wife and I got back and I was all cheery and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And within about 3 days, I was back worse than I was before. And things were really sort of sinking fast. And it was a wild experience because I was the workplace mental health lawyer having my own workplace mental health breakdown and really not sure how to kind of be my own client. And, you know, I knew the legal end of it, but the actual logistics, I wasn't sure how to sort of make it work. And, you know, I was consulting with a relative who was a psychiatrist going, when do you sort of pull the goalie, so to speak? You know, at what point should I actually make some movements here? And he was very helpful. And I was lucky that I had some resources. And so I, quite frankly, left on sick leave and didn't return. I was kind of advised not to go back by my medical team. And it was the right decision. So I can take a pause if that answers sort of half the question.
Yeah, it definitely does.
So then you want to talk about the transition sort of going into the new career?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's like, you know, so many young lawyers, there's, you know, sometimes the gray area of is practicing not for me, or is my mental health just needing a break? And sometimes determining the difference can be challenging. Do you know what I mean?
I went to a dinner from the Advocate Society, I think when I was just called or very early on. And it was a neat chance for new calls and new lawyers to have dinner with very senior lawyers. And I remember talking to someone who was a senior partner, they're, you know, 25, 30 years in. And they described the 3 week rule. And it stuck with me. I think it's interesting that they said, you know, look, there's bad days in law and there's bad weeks. And there's weeks, especially when you're still trying to figure things out, where things just won't go your way. And those weeks get better for most people. And then for some, they don't. And they said, you know, give it a really good 3 week look if things are in a hard time. Because if things are, you know, if you've got a tough week or a tough file and then things get better the next week, that's just ebb and flow of life. But if you have really 3 weeks in a row that you are just absolutely soul crushing miserable, it might be time to look at something new. And in my case, it was, you know, longer than 3 weeks, but that's stuck with me. I don't think it's a bad piece of advice.
No, that's super helpful. I have never heard that like 3 week rule phrased that way. I think that that's super crucial to remember. I wish I'd heard it earlier myself. And I think that's, you know, it's true of anything in life. So Sean, you left practice, you now run your own business. And so we're so curious, what led you to start the Right Stuff Agency?
Sure. So part of it was some of the work that I did in law. I had read my own blog after I was called to the bar that, you know, had a fair bit of traction, won a couple of clobbies. It was just something that the Canadian Law Blog Awards, just something that I had sort of done for fun. And I never monetized it. It was just kind of a project of, hey, I've got some good knowledge here and the ability to tell a story, and obviously not giving any advice, but kind of giving information in a way that was really easily digestible for a broad audience. So I had done that. I had done some content writing prior to even law school, just a little bit. And I had done a fair bit of blogging for firms I was with and for some other companies. And I knew that I had that ability to kind of synthesize complex information and make it simple, and then tell those stories in a way that was really easy to understand for an audience and engaging and informative. And I realized that, you know, not everyone has this. This is a gift that I have kind of with my combined background. And I say, my wife elbowed me in the ribs and said, you know, you're a writer, go and write. And it was the best advice that I've gotten. I had never ghostwritten. So it was a new path for me. And it really sort of led, as I was doing doc reviews, said, you know what, maybe there's some extra hustle here, maybe there's some extra money here. I didn't know what it was going to become. But I threw up the world's worst, most basic website. That was something I did in the afternoon, just a patch job of a single post of, hey, this is what I'm open to doing now. A couple samples from firms I was with that they were kind enough to let me use, and a quick resume. And I started getting inquiries. I threw it up on my own social channels, and I was getting questions from, you know, friends and people I knew saying, hey, you know, I've read your stuff before. It's good. Can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? And I said, sure. I, you know, was a little bit of a risk taker in that, hey, let's give it a shot. If it works, great. If not, that's okay too. And I did, and I was having some success, and I, you know, took on some fun projects. I mean, in the beginning, I was writing for a local real estate agent out here about neighborhoods around my town. I was writing for a classmate from Windsor for her real estate firm. I was writing for a criminal law firm. I was writing about high-end custom kitchens in the Bahamas. I helped someone edit their master's thesis on sustainable fashion. I was doing some really sort of funky stuff. And I said, you know what, maybe there's something here. And after those projects went down, I really took a look and went, okay, you know, I've got some proof of concept now. Maybe I'll sink a little bit into this. And I started sort of building it up very slowly alongside the doc review. It's funny when I look at my, you know, my numbers for 2020, I started as a sole proprietor. I look at my numbers for 2020 and I was, you know, doing doc review during the days and starting this business updates and weekends. And I would have thought that my income was a 50-50 split, and it wasn't. You know, most of it was doc review, and I think about a quarter of it was sort of money earned from the business. But it started building up and started evolving, and I had some proof of concept and picking up more clients, and some word of mouth started spreading. And I was very lucky that I got to a place in doc review where I'd, you know, saved up enough income that I said, you know what, by 2021, I had incorporated, I was, you know, giving this a real fair shake. And I said, you know, let me give it the summer of just seeing if I could do this and make a go at it. And if I can't, I have the doc review available to me, but let's give this a shot. And I haven't looked back. It's almost 2 years now, and it has just been an absolutely wild ride of growth. And I'm so grateful for it.
That is so neat. And too bad that you don't have to go to the Bahamas to see these kitchens in real life. And
I then tried, keep writing. I tried. So the problem was, actually, that project fell apart. COVID hit. Hit the Bahamas hard. And so they wound up, they had to like pull all their work. They pulled the website halfway through. So yeah, unfortunately, I didn't get to write off that trip, but I wanted to.
Oh, yeah, that would have been so cool. Well, I'm hoping that there is a trip to the Bahamas or somewhere nice and warm in your future where you have to do some, you know, real experiential learning for your writing projects.
You know, it's funny you say that. I'm going to Disney with my family next month, and I actually have a couple clients in Florida, so I'm not able to write off the whole trip, but I'm definitely going to see some clients while I'm there. So it's nice to have that online business where you have clients all over the place, and you can sort of find a way to make some connections.
That is so cool. Well, enjoy. That is going to be so much fun. So what have been some of your biggest challenges and successes? And I know it's only been 2 years, but it's been a pretty big 2 years from what it sounds like. So we'd just love to hear a bit more about how you've grown.
It's been just an adventure. You know, I joke that I started a marketing business with no background in marketing or business, quite frankly. And I, you know, you make up things as you go along, but you learn really quickly, and you learn to outsource is really the best thing. If you are have something totally outside of your scope, I'm not a numbers guy. I have a great accountant. I owe him tax stuff after this. I have, you know, thankfully a wife much smarter than me who's able to help with, you know, some of the operational end of things. I have some great supports in my network who are really able to help with aspects of the business. So, you know, it's always a learning curve. I'm really proud of the growth because it has been completely organic. I've done almost no marketing. It's been entirely word of mouth, and that is, you know, a neat experience. There are always challenges along the way. There are challenges, you know, that come up every single day. There are challenges with clients. There are challenges with, you know, billing and collections. There are challenges with, you know, negotiations on fees and such. And there's just going to be operational headaches in terms of running a business. So you learn and you grow and you, you know, adjust and you reposition. Everything is an experience for growth. And, you know, it is cliche, but it is true that you don't learn from success. You learn from failure. And, you know, you're not really going to fail if you're betting on yourself, but you'll certainly learn a few things.
Absolutely. So Sean, you know, we talk about failure a lot on the podcast. In fact, I think it's one of our favorite things to talk about because, like, completely agree, you definitely learn more from failures than you do successes. And it's interesting, today in my job, I was conducting a lot of mock interviews with students going through a formal recruitment. And one of the questions that we often bring up in these mock interviews is, you know, what's the time you made a mistake, or what's one of the greatest failures you've had, and what did you learn from it? And it's so interesting hearing everybody's different experiences and what some people, you know, constitute failure versus what other people constitute failure. And so I'm wondering what, you know, is a failure that sticks out to you in your career so far, as you know, something that was the most impactful teaching moment for you?
It's a really interesting question because, you know, it's, I think perspective and how you look at things is so much of it. The question comes up and people don't ask me directly. They're pretty good about it. But I ask myself, did I fail at my law career? You know, did I fail in practice? Was it my failing? Were there things that I could have done differently? And there's certainly a perspective that would tell you yes. You know, there's certainly a voice that would say, yeah, this didn't go well. And a lot of that was on you. Were there choices, you know, that I made that I could have done differently? I don't regret any of it. I am grateful that I had that experience. You know, I joke about, you know, learning from that last year of practice that I never want to go back into it. So I'm grateful for that. I'm also grateful for the fact that I was able to help a whole lot of people. I had some really great client wins and I had, you know, some great connections with colleagues and such. So I'm happy that I did it. I don't really look at things in terms of, you know, that grand lens of failure. Even, you know, I have failures now in my business all the time. And, you know, my father's a chiropractor. So anytime a patient, you know, stops coming, you're fired. That's a failure or it's a success. Depends on how you look at it. If I have a client that discontinues services, if I don't hit it out of the mark on the first draft, if I have, you know, I've had two or three clients over the past 3 years where it hasn't just been the right fit and we've been able to sort of part amicably. Yeah, they're failures, but I take them as those learning opportunities that are, you know, wins, whether for a great learning experience or sort of learning, you know, the new boundaries. So I think there's so much to be said for how you frame that narrative and, you know, whether you see it as a failure that you're going to beat yourself up over, or whether you sort of take it as a real win.
It's so interesting because I literally listened to a podcast yesterday. The podcast is by an online coach named Dallas Travers, and she runs business coaching for other online coaches. And a friend of mine actually works with Dallas and sent me this podcast episode because she thought I'd really relate to it. And the guest on the episode is a woman named Angela Vorpal, who's based in the US and runs a coaching business for law students to help them achieve higher grades, market themselves to better firms, especially when they come more from state schools and things like that, which is, you know, a very different like system, I guess, in the US, like in terms of schools and rankings than we have here in Canada. And this podcast, I've only listened to the one episode ever of this other podcast, but this podcast is, I think, like a little bit of a live coaching podcast. So they're kind of like coaching the guests through their problems. And one of the issues that the guest Angela spoke about that she was dealing with, and like one of her roadblocks was, you know, feeling like people viewed her as like a failure at her law career because she chose this different path. She started her own business. And she said, and I didn't necessarily agree with this comment, but she said, you know, law is all about prestige. And she said, you know, when I was in law school, like And when I was a lawyer, it was like immediately when you meet someone, you're trying to assess like where you lie in terms of prestige with them. And she said, my business, I'm not coaching like C-suite executives. I'm not coaching partners at law firms. I'm not coaching lawyers. I'm coaching 1L law students. I specifically just coach 1L law students. And she said, it's like the lowest of the low of anything I could have left to do. And I didn't agree with that comment, but it was just so interesting because on the episode, the host, Dallas, sort of talked her through like breaking down, you know, like the belief system she held about that. And so when you mentioned, like, did I fail at my law career and like wondering that, it was so interesting because I just listened to a very different conversation about the same topic yesterday. And I wonder if that's something that a lot of people that choose like alternate JD Advantage career paths feel.
I think there's certainly some of it for sure. You know, I remember I have a lot of theories about that podcast, and I disagree a whole lot with her premise, but that's a whole other conversation. I remember years ago, I had a lot of my friends were lawyers before I was, and I, you know, I joke that I went to law school to understand what the heck they were talking about because they used to sit, you know, talk shop with each other. We got together for dinner and I was just completely lost. But I remember one of my friends talking about, you know, going to a coffee shop before trial, and the barista was a classmate from Osgood, and he said it terrified him. It really just scared the hell out of him. And, you know, that stuck with me. Looking back in hindsight, I don't think that's a scary thing at all. If that's what you want to be doing, that's what you want to be doing. And, you know, I'm so lucky that I found a passion that helps others. But if my passion was going to go work at a restaurant or do something else entirely, I would be so thrilled that I found that. You know, one of the biggest challenges with law, frankly, is the debt load. And you know, when you see this a fair bit, Piper, I'm sure, in your career, coaching students, but the debt load that, you know, you carry in your career, and you really do have a bit of the golden handcuffs in that even if you leave practice, you have to be able to find a way to pay back that very significant debt so as not to sink yourself. And so I'm very lucky that I found something that, frankly, you know, paid better than my law career did. And I've been able to be successful at it. But you do get yourself a little bit stuck there. The other difference, you know, and we can get into it more, but obviously US and Canada are very different. And law schools, you know, across Canada are very similar. I find that, you know, when I talk to a lot of American law students, especially with the tiered law schools, there is a whole lot of prestige that we just don't have here. At the end of the day, no one cares here where you went to law school. And a degree from U of T is as good, or if not just as good or better in a courtroom as a degree from Saskatchewan or Lakehead or Calgary or, you know, Dalhousie or wherever, all darn fine schools, or Windsor. Let's include ourselves here. The thing that, you know, is funny with, and I'll close with this, the thing that's funny with the way that I position myself, especially sort of as a solopreneur and running my own business, the law degree, there's no question, gets me a seat at the table. And I'm milking it for every penny that I spent on that damn thing. But it gets me a seat at the table, and I have no shame about that. But I don't come in with a lawyer's ego. I thankfully never, I think, had a lawyer's ego. I can make myself as big or as small as I want to be. And I say that, you know, to colleagues now, is if you want me to sort of be the suit and tie lawyer who comes in, you know, to call the shots and tell you what you're doing wrong, I can play that part. You know me a little bit, Piper. That's not really me, but I can play that part. I have that ability. But I love that I can play, you know, as small time folksy as I want, and sort of my real self of, you know, look, I like to be as relatable as possible. Yeah, I have some papers that I spent too long in school, and I have some very expensive receipts in the basement. But I, you know, like to be as relatable as I can. I want to help you be more relatable in whatever it is that you do so that you can improve on your business.
Ooh, I really like that. How to be relatable. I think that's really interesting. Okay. So another big thing, or a big change in your world these days, is that you are now back in the classroom, but this time in the front of the class. So we would love to know a bit more about how that's been going for you, because I think it's pretty recent, right?
It is pretty recent. I am now teaching law, which is hilarious because it's something I never thought that I'd you know, I figured I'd teach at some point. I knew that it would come together, and I didn't even think that I would be teaching law because I don't have a master's in law. I'm not a legal academic, so I wasn't expecting, you know, to teach at a law school. But an opportunity at a local college came up to teach employment law, and I jumped at it. And, you know, I was concerned I was a little, you know, far removed from things, and I didn't really have what it takes. Turns out I do. You know, it's usually taught by HR professionals, so to have a lawyer teaching that employment law course is certainly helpful for them. And it's been a lot of fun because it's like at a college level, and because it's sort of meant to be very experiential. What I'm doing is really sort of giving a perspective of what things are like on the ground. And, you know, even though I didn't have much experience in practice, I certainly had some, and I certainly, you know, knew colleagues who had more experience than I did. So I've heard enough war stories, and I'm able to kind of relate those of, hey, this is, you know, this is what the textbook says, and this is great. Here's how you read the cases, and here's what things actually look like day to day, and here's what you're going to see when you're, this is a postgrad, they're all going to be in the working world by next year. So here's what you're actually going to see in your career and how you can handle it. The other thing that I'm doing that I, you know, have been loving so far, and people have been wonderful, is I'm getting guest lectures to come in and sort of do video that they can watch in their off hours for the students, but sort of talking about these issues on the ground. So old colleagues, old friends who have generously, you know, sort of given their time over Zoom to really unpack some of the issues in employment law, for example. And you know what it looks like in their practice day to day. So that's a great perspective for them to have.
That's so innovative, Sean, and I'm sure that the students really appreciate that. You've had the opportunity now to see the law from so many different perspectives and the legal profession from so many different perspectives. Like, I think, you know, in case it hasn't sunk in, like, and I'm definitely going to miss something, but like, you've practice in multiple type of firm and organizational environments. You've done doc review, you worked in marketing and big law, like you have now run your own business working with some legal clients, not all legal clients. You're now teaching at a college, you're teaching law. Like, that's so many different perspectives. And so obviously this is a really big question, and we've already addressed the debt load a little bit. And I was laughing earlier when you were saying, oh, you know, Piper, in your career, you probably see a lot with the debt loads. I mean, Aaron and I don't have to look much further than our own bank accounts to remember the debt loads. But I guess my question is, Sean, like, what do you really think most needs to change or evolve in the legal profession? If you could only pick, you know, maybe one main thing.
I think it all comes down to mental health. I think the debt load is another huge piece, but I don't think that's going to change. But, you know, the conversation around mental health and the law is starting. It's starting, we're talking about it, it's in its infancy. And I'll be honest, I think it's very performative in a lot of circles, you know, so that we're talking about the fact that it's a concern and it's something that people face, but we're really not sure what to do about it. We're really not sure how to deal with it. And we're not willing to sort of make these systemic changes in the profession to actually make it more accommodating for others. So when you know, see someone who's really struggling, I have friends who certainly struggled through articles and had, you know, a lot of mental health issues, even just through articling, which is not uncommon. And the firms were generally pretty good and made accommodations, but accommodations are great in individual circumstances. There's no question. I think there needs to be a change to the norm of how we do things, what the expectation looks like. You know, we see it across younger generations in all aspects of the workforce. People just, you know, are not willing to stand for nonsense. So they're not willing to do things just because, you know, our forebears did them, and, you know, generations before did crazy things. So we have to as well. A lot of us are not putting up with that. And I hope that that starts to lead to some changes in terms of how firms are run, what expectations are like. You know, we're having, I think, a very different conversation, and I'm not in firms anymore, but there's a different conversation publicly than there is behind the scenes. And I think until the latter changes, we're really not there yet. So I see pieces of it starting, but I really am hopeful that there is a broader movement happening that I just haven't heard about yet.
That is an excellent point that, you know, it needs to be happening behind the closed doors also, and not just, you know, with seminars and, you know, different programs and policies. know, they're never as good as making sure that that's actually happening for the people that are working there. So, totally agree. I hope that there is some more change because, yeah, nothing really is going to fully change unless everyone's on board and making it a concerted effort.
Can I jump in with one last point for a second?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I've talked about this actually with the Career Center at Windsor a little bit, but I think there needs to be more room for students, you know, like myself. I don't know that I realized in school that I wouldn't be in practice forever, but I think there needs to be a conversation even in school for people who realize, hey, this is not for me. I'm doing this degree and, you know, maybe I'll get my call, but this is not what I want to do with my career. What are some of the other options out there? That, you know, we don't need to foist everybody into big law. We don't need to foist everybody into social justice. There's so many career opportunities out there with a JD that are either parallel or perpendicular or totally unrelated where it's helpful. And I think we need to have those conversations to support people even as early as the student years who go, hey, what else can I do with this? So instead of them going through and spending their first couple years miserable until they figure it out, maybe they actually have some institutional supports early on to, you know, look at those other career options.
Yeah, this is something I feel super passionate about. And I'm like organizing a panel at the school that I work at to take place later this semester, like the JD Edge panel. And I'm not taking credit for that. It's a regular panel that the school hosts, but in my new role, it's my job to organize it. But what I will say is, you know, a friend of mine said to me yesterday, a friend of mine in the profession said, we're not going to yoga our way out of this. Like, we're not going to like one. And that's, you know, I can't claim that she created that phrase. Like, I've heard that before, but I was reminded of it yesterday. And it's so true. Like, we're not going to yoga our way out of a mental health crisis in law. And I really believe that like wellness in law, like starts when you're a student. And when we send burnt out, like anxious students into the profession, that's not going to lead to longevity in their careers, should that be the type of career path they want to pursue. And so I wish I had the answers, and I'm definitely working on getting to a point where I maybe develop some answers. But right now I just have more questions about why some things are the way that they are.
Yeah, I would also add, so, I mean, I just work for myself. It's just me. No one's pulling the strings behind the scene. It's me. I'm the one that decides whether I want to take calls on some days or go to hearings. And Piper will know this, and who knows when this episode comes out. But when we're recording this, I said at the beginning of the year, I want to do Wellness Wednesdays. So it was my dedication to myself. Wednesdays are when I have therapy. I was going to try to take Wednesdays to be no hearing days, no client meetings, work if I need to catch up on stuff. But otherwise, the goal was wellness comes first. It's like a midweek check-in, and that was the goal. And I know this. I know that it's good for me. I know that I should do it. I, you know, changed my calendar to make sure that nothing would conflict. But it is now well into 2023, and I've had a hearing every single Wednesday. And I've had client calls every single Wednesday, and I am still struggling to make a Wellness Wednesday a reality. And so I think part of it too is like, we can know even with ourselves that our mental health needs to take a priority. We know things that will make it better and do things for ourselves, but it is so much harder to actually put that into practice and then follow through with it, because it's just me. Like, no one else telling me I have to do the hearings. No one's telling me I have to do this, but there is that like behind the scenes, like, maybe if I just, you know, take this hearing, this Wellness Wednesday, and then I just catch up on work the next Wednesday and the Wednesdays after that will be fine. You know, I don't know. This is my rant to come on the subject.
It's tough. And it's tough when you're running your own practice. It's tough when you're running your own business. One of the things I'm dealing with, frankly, is post-COVID fatigue. You know, after getting sick a couple times, as I get wiped out in the afternoon, then I need to take a little bit of rest, and I need an afternoon nap like an old man. And I sort of have to set that time aside. And, you know, I find that I really do suffer when I don't have that. What you said, Piper, really resonated about we're not going to yoga our way out of this, because when I was, you know, breaking down still in practice, I was doing as much as I could with my mental health. I was going through therapy, I was meditating a ton. I was doing yoga regularly. And it was at the point where it wasn't yogaing me out. It was just kind of getting me through the days. And, you know, I was sort of that respite that I needed, where like I would take a call and then have to go meditate for 10 minutes. And that's just not a way to function. So it might, you know, help to some extent, but I think it needs to be implemented preventatively of, you know, good practices, and not just, hey, we're going to bill 80 hours a week and then, you know, do yoga for the other 10 and hope that all works out. I don't think you can get away with doing that, even though a lot of folks try.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for joining us today. We are so happy we got to have this conversation with you. And we always like to end our podcast with the same question, which is, what is something new that you've learned recently?
Well, so it's funny. I play a lot of trivia. That's my sort of big side hobby, side hustle. So I learn something new all the time. What's something new that I learned recently? I think I'm kind of always learning what I'm capable of, and that I'm capable of doing things that I didn't expect or didn't see myself doing. Or, you know, I'm in a world that's so completely outside of where I thought I would be, and yet probably where I was meant to be all along. And so anytime that I try a new project, work with a new client, I'm gaining confidence going, yeah, let's give this a shot. Let's try something new. Let's learn something new. I learned so much from my clients and from the work, because I don't obviously just work in law. I'm across all industries. So I'm always learning and writing about something new and telling new stories. And I love it. There's always something new out there.
Sean, that's so great. I think it's so true. We are all hopefully always learning about what we're capable of and what we can handle and take on, and what we choose to approach and like what we choose to take on for ourselves. And so that's so interesting. I'm sure you get to work with such a diverse and a variety of clientele. And that's very exciting. You know, I'm very excited for your Disney work, non-work trip. I can't wait to hear about it. And I can't wait to see any and all of the writing you put out about it. And yeah, Sean, thank you so much for joining us. This was such a treat. Erin and I had so been looking forward to this. We are such big fans of just all of the goodness that you put into the world. You are someone who is just, you know, inherently good. And that is just such like positive, wonderful energy that the world and our profession needs more of. So thank you so much for being here.
Coming from an inherently good person who has shown me the way, in the way that you conduct yourself and how you help others. Erin, I'm sorry I don't know you as well yet, but you know, I will. That is incredibly kind. So thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sean. Thanks for joining us for this episode. To stay up to date with the podcast, follow us on Instagram at Off the Tracks Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite listening platform for a brand new episode of Off the Tracks Podcast every Tuesday.